is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line, back from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy rest of the week. Michael Lombardi is here. We have a really good guest list for hour number two, Michael. Our burning questions teams of the day, talking Pittsburgh Steelers, Indianapolis Colts. We'll kick it off with Jerry Dulac in about 15 minutes from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Then flip it on forward to Indianapolis. Mike Chappell from Fox 59, CBS 4 in Indy joins us here in a half hour. So excited for that. We're coming up on exactly 48 hours till the Hall of Fame game, although the question of who will actually play is certainly coming into the fold. And we have some news to share on that as well as far as availability. We'll start first on what Bears quarterback Caleb Williams had to say as far as him wanting to play in the Hall of Fame game. This was from late yesterday with Caleb discussing the pros and the cons to suiting it up when you have the extra preseason game.
I always think there's more pros than cons than anything. Especially for a young guy like myself, the reps are always paramount for anybody like myself. A young rookie, second year guy, third year guy, it's paramount. It's really important. And you know, we'll see about these preseason games coming up, how they play out.
We can flip it forward right now, because just a few minutes ago, speaking after Bears training camp practice, head coach Matt Eberflus says not only will Caleb Williams not play in the Hall of Fame game Thursday, but also none of the first team starters will go at all. So get ready for a whole lot of Tyson Bagent to kick off your 2024 football viewing experience.
Well, it's not some – look, you can't play. Here's the problem you have when you're trying to put together a preseason roster is you've got to ask yourself, who's the backup offensive line? Right. And so that's the fundamental question. You can't put Caleb Williams, after you've just guaranteed him all this money, and behind a bad offensive line. I don't care who they play for the Houston Texans. So, you know, there lies the problem. Williams needs to play with the first team line. And so when they put second team line in, that's where Badgett's got to come in and play, or Brett Rypien or whomever. And the Bears' depth in the offensive line has yet to be revealed. They're going to have to determine that. It's going to take some time. So, look, as much as you want to play, there's going to be games. They're going to have some inter-squad scrimmages, which will certainly help Caleb Williams. But this game is going to be too easy. It's going to be a cover three, cover one game, and there's too much risk. If you don't play your starters, you can't really play the quarterback.
It makes a lot of sense, and there will be plenty of reps for Caleb still to come in training camp. That latest line, just getting some of the updated odds screen here, Houston still 1-point favorite. 31.5 is the total. So based off of that news and the lack of starters here, that thing just jumped at least a DK, a full point to the under. It's not a surprise with how historically these unders have really gotten smashed lower and lower. Something you've pointed out in the past too, Michael. It's just a situation where once you get all the backups in, you're just less likely to see the explosive plays, the elite pass or really run protection in any sort of way from blocking perspective with the lack of good quality depth on a lot of these teams' offensive line. So not a shock at all to see that under take a pop there, now down to 31.5.
Yeah, no, and you know, that's why we talked about Will Hill. And it's not like Houston's going to do much better than Chicago. Houston has better quarterbacks' names, and certainly Davis Mills could go out there and execute fairly well. So could Case Keenum. But in reality, without a good line, it's hard for even a veteran quarterback, because once they take away the route, you've got inexperienced receivers trying to play. There's really no coordination. It's too hard to get everybody on the same page. So that's why the scoring's way down.
Couple other news and notes here as camp gets underway to Tampa Bay, where they're still working on a deal for Tristan Wirfs, a key part of that offensive line there. He is a hold-in situation, as the GM Jason Light saying they are optimistic on a deal with Wirfs, thinks he deserves to be the highest paid left tackle in the NFL here. Wirfs would make about $18.5 million on his fifth-year rookie option, but it's a situation where Wirfs, I mean, that kind of is where the offensive line is all centered around there for Tampa, and they've really gambled here, that investment now going forward here, that Baker Mayfield and this Bucs offense can duplicate some of the success from last year. Wirfs, no question, Michael, a huge part of that.
It has to be, right? This is a team that has finished 32nd in the league 2 years in a row in rushing. They can't run the ball, whether Tom Brady plays quarterback or whether Baker Mayfield plays quarterback. They cannot. I mean, they're so one-dimensional offensively, it's remarkable they're able to do anything. And so Wirth is one of the few guys that they have in their offensive line that can do a lot. And he is a great pass protector, and he does so much. I mean, look, the Jets took Becton over Wirfs. You think about that. You know, you're a Jet fan. You know, if you have Wirfs at left tackle, you're in good shape. You took Becton. Becton's now in Philadelphia trying to win a job as a third tackle. So they'll pay Wirfs. I think I saw I saw Jason Light come out and say he's going to be, we'll make him with the highest pay. They have to. They have no choice but to, and he will be, and it'll be worthwhile. It's like Trent Williams in San Francisco. They're going to have to pay Trent Williams. You can't leave that alone.
And Christian Darrisaw, he was the latest to get signed as far as those left tackles for Minnesota, about $26 million a year. I just signed his deal pretty recently. The question I have on Tampa Bay, you know, it's, yeah, you figure the worst deal, that will get done, but you're investing a lot here at center. I mean, Graham Barton is the round one draft pick, and you talk about an offensive line. You just detailed all the struggles. Reasonably, what can you expect from Barton coming in right away? Super important position, too, in the league coming in as a rookie center starting from day one. I'll have to reset, Mike. Oh, I was so excited to hear what he had to say. This is a show where you get excited about what people have to say on a rookie center in a Graham Barton. Again, that's the big news on the Buccaneers side of things. Other kind of breaking news, we'll get Michael's thoughts here in a couple minutes once we get everything reconnected here. But a day after we had a PAD suspension, Nico Autry, who was brought over from Houston to Houston from Tennessee in the offseason. Autry yesterday given a 6-game PED suspension, and a guy that is in a big role potentially for Tennessee, also given a 6-game suspension today, Arden Key. That was just announced. There was not much of a comment given from head coach Brian Callahan. He basically said, I don't have much to say on it. But Key expected to be a key starter opposite Harold Landry on this rebuilt Titans defense. But Arden Key now out 6 games as well. So that is back-to-back days where pretty focal points of individual AFC South defenders are out due to that 6-game PED suspension. And it was a situation where Key had the third most sacks by any Titan on the defensive side last year, was 6 last year. So that's certainly a big loss on the Tennessee front. Other news of the day, too, talking Matthew Judon. In case you missed that, we discussed it to start the show. But Judon even though he was participating in the non-padded drills, he sat out practice on the first day of full pads yesterday. Super animated on the sideline getting into it. As he has expressed his displeasure with a lack of a contract extension there. After it was amended last year, he's set to earn around $7.5 million going through this year. But that was the other big story as well. Coming up, we're just finishing the thought here, Michael, as we have Michael back. Just on the center position, what do you expect up there for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Graham Barton, who was invested in as a first-round draft pick this year, trying to fortify an offensive line that's had so many struggles?
Yeah, they've put money in the line. They just haven't been able to hit with the picks. They've got to hit with Barton. They've got to be able to get some kind of movement. I mean, they can't. Baker Mayfield's a quarterback who needs to have balance in the offense. And, you know, Wirth is the one of the key components. I mean, he can go into Detroit when they play Detroit and block Aiden Hutchinson. So it gives them an opportunity, you know, when they do it. Atlanta doesn't have a great pass rusher. So when they play within the division, Ganderson down in New Orleans certainly gives them some trouble. But for me, Burns is no longer in Carolina, but Wirth is one of the best players in the north, in the South, in terms of his position at left tackle. They need him, but they're going to have to get Barton to catch up to speed really quickly, or else this isn't going to work. I mean, that's going to be the key. They have to get more production out of that offensive line, and it starts with run blocking, which is typically, usually when you're dealing with these teams, you're not dealing with the run block, you're dealing with a team that can't pass protect, but this team can't run block. I mean, they've got Cody Mulch in there at right guard. He was a second-round pick. They've got a second-round pick at right tackle. They got a first-round pick at center. They signed a free agent from the Giants, and then they got worse. So, I mean, they've put money into it, and they've got Robert Hansey, who they drafted in the third round in 2021, backup center. They just got to hit with these picks, Ben.
Yeah, it is fascinating how it's sort of the reverse of what you would expect based on where the struggles have been. And it's kind of been a line, and they've been snake bit. You go back to Ryan Jensen, lost for the season in camp a couple years ago when they felt like they'd finally had everything solid in place for Tom Brady toward the end of his run in Tampa Bay. A big question mark there for a line that has a lot to get excited about, how the integration and the pieces all mesh. Something to watch out for there in the NFC South. All right, time for what is on Michael's mind for this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, and it is a very special day as it is the anniversary of the death of Bill Walsh, somebody who is so key and important to your career, Michael, and it's a great opportunity here to remember him today.
Yeah, we lost Coach Walsh way too early, 2007. He succumbed to leukemia. I got to spend a lot of time with him at the end of his life. He was very benevolent and very giving. And my regret in life has been that I left the 49ers way too early. There was much more to learn from the greatness of Coach Walsh, and I learn about it every single day. And hopefully Gridiron Genius is a tribute to him. It's certainly not about me. It's about the greatness of him as a coach, as a leader. And on days like today, you're always thinking about those times when I would see him walking down the hall in those khaki slacks, white shoes, perfectly pressed white shirt, and always had some interesting way of trying to explain a very complex item in a simplistic form. I owe a lot of my career, whether it's been in football, whether it's been as a writer, whether it's been as somebody who commentates on football, to Coach Walsh, and I'm very proud to have been a part of that, and I wear that 49er ring with great sense of reverence to the greatest coach that I've been around, including Coach Belichick, Coach Walsh. I'm fortunate to be around them.
Yeah, hard to believe, too. I mean, it all started Washington High School in 1957, and to think that from there to one of the greats in NFL history, pretty special as well on that. Well said, Michael, remembering Bill Walsh. Yeah, passed away on this day, 2007, there in his home state of California, and will be always good to reflect as well on his legacy, no doubt on that. All right, we still have a lot to get to here on the show. When we're going to come back, we will talk each of our two teams we discussed earlier in the show today. We have a couple great guests as well. Jerry Dulac from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He joins us to talk all things Pittsburgh Steelers. A lot of news, too. Some injuries, some concern about reps at the quarterback spot. We'll get Jerry's take on that when we come back. Then also, in about 20 minutes or so, get into the Colts discussion as well with our guest, Mike Chappell. That is all still to come in our second hour of this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. And if you sign up before the end of the day tomorrow, you receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access and access to all of our daily Pro Picks 24/7 video all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and you get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Do not miss out on these preseason deals. Visit vsin.com/subscribe to sign up today. That is vsin.com/subscribe. Excited to dive into a lot of college football stuff here later in the week. Right now, though, back with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. We've got a lot of NFL headlines to get into. Two teams here with Michael's burning questions today, the first of which the Pittsburgh Steelers. And a lot going on at camp right now. It's an exciting time. You're not at all just sitting around waiting if you're a Steelers beat reporter right now. And that's why we've got Jerry Dulac kind enough to join us right now as we go out to the Progressive Guest Line out in Latrobe, PA, where Steelers camp is underway. Jerry, thank you so much for coming back with us here on the Lombardi Line. The injury piece from today is the rookie Roman Wilson leaves camp carted off with an ankle injury. As far as the expectation of his role in the offense to start out in, on an offense where we figure there's going to be some rookies that are heavily relied upon here early, Jerry, what's kind of been your expectation on Wilson? How is he being used early on before this injury kind of dampened his progress here earlier today?
Well, fellas, good afternoon. I do not know the extent of his injury, not yet. So it's hard to say how long he might be out. I will tell you that they really like Roman Wilson. He's like a Hines Ward type. He's not as thick as Hines Ward was, but, you know, he was known for his blocking ability. He's known for his ability to catch the ball in traffic. We saw that in college, and that's what they really liked about this guy. I think his size is one of the reasons why he didn't go higher in the draft, but when you watch his tape, it's very impressive. And so, you know, is he ready to be their number two receiver? No. I think as of right now, that role will probably fall to Van Jefferson, who, you know, has a chance to be a decent performer in this offense. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk, of course, during the offseason about the Steelers' interest in Brandon Ayuk. I've never thought that trade was going to happen only because of how much the 49ers were asking. But, you know, when you lose Deontay Johnson, who is a proven quality NFL receiver, and you don't have a guy of that ilk to go along with George Pickens, who's only in his third year, you know, to me, that's a deficiency then. That's a step down for their wide receiver core, pending on what happens with the guys they brought in, Kez Watkins, Van Jefferson, you know, and Roman Wilson. We'll have to see how that plays out once they start playing games.
Hey, Jerry, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. You do a great job in Pittsburgh, always have. I've always enjoyed reading you. The offensive line, will we see three rookies start in that offensive line, or will Mason McCormick not be able to win a starting job?
Yeah, Mike, it's always good to be with you. I hope you're doing well. I don't think you're, in the first preseason game, I don't think you're going to see any rookies start. Let's start at center. Nate Herbig is starting there now. You know, all during the offseason when Omar Khan was asked about, look, you don't have any centers. He goes, look, Nate Herbig's a center, can play center, and that's where they have him now. Eventually, look, they didn't draft Zach Frazier to lead the band at halftime. They drafted him, and he will eventually move in there. Same with Troy Fontano. Look, Dan Moore, despite what some people here think about him, and I don't mean the Steelers, I just mean fans, this guy has started at left tackle, you know, Mike, most important position on the line since day one of his rookie year, and he won't be re-signed because they're going to put Broderick Jones at left tackle and Troy Fontano is going to be at right tackle. They're going to let Dan Moore go in free agency because he'll get a monster contract as a starting left tackle in 4 years in the NFL. Somebody will sign him to a big deal. Eventually, I don't think they're going to wait very long for Troy Fontano, though. I mean, he is very good. His technique is very good. Could see it already. And I don't think that Mason McCormick is going to be a starter this year at all. But I was talking to some of the coaches today, and they really like him. They're surprised he moves as well as he does. The tape that they saw of him in college, they thought he played stiff, even though they liked him, but they thought he played stiff. But apparently he was playing with some type of neck brace that kind of made him look like he was stiff. But he's been very, very athletic here so far. And they like him. I don't think he's going to start this year. James Daniels is a free agent after the season. And so long as they like what they see in Mason McCormick, I think it's going to be a year before he moves into that role.
Breaking down the different positional battles here, especially on the offensive line with Jerry Dulac. You can follow at Jerry Dulac, D-U-L-A-C, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The quarterback situation is what everybody is wondering and talking about. And with the Russell Wilson-Justin Fields combination, we've seen Wilson suiting up in pads. It's been hilarious seeing the Mike Tomlin, the response to the question about the reps. Vintage Tomlin here. How has it gone early on? What are kind of the early reports as far as, you know, how these two are fitting into a new offensive system with Arthur Smith that is certainly still predicated on running the ball, but running the ball in a much more 2024-esque manner that's a little bit more forward-thinking than the Steelers have had in the past?
Certainly the most curious element of what has transpired with the quarterbacks in the first week is the fact that after bringing in a new training staff and on the first day of conditioning drills, that they would have any quarterback participate in pushing a heavy sled, let alone a 36-year-old quarterback. I get offensive linemen, I get defensive linemen, but in all sports, you have specific training for specific players, specific positions, specific sports. Why they would have Russell Wilson pushing a heavy sled and tweaking his calf is just beyond me. So it's kept him out of the team drills. He got out there today for a little bit, and he's fine. They're not concerned at all. They're just being careful. But he was participating in every individual drill and moving, you know, doing the pocket drills for the footwork. There's no issue with his calf. They're just, I mean, it's tweaked, but it's not anything serious. And he seems to, you know, he seems to be fine, and they know he's fine. But it has given Justin Fields a lot of reps, you know, in the first week. But, you know, what you see from Justin Fields, fellas, is what you probably would expect. that when he has single coverage down the sideline, he can really throw that football. He throws a few dimes that has thrown a few dimes that are very impressive. But when he has to, go over the middle, you can see he's a little uncertain, and that's always been the problem with him in Chicago. Not always sure what he's looking at, but there's no question. We saw it again today in their 7-on-7 shots drill. A little play action runs around the end. I mean, his ability to run is a big weapon. And even though Russell Wilson is going to be the quarterback, I'm curious to see if they will come up with a couple plays, to use Justin Fields, maybe 2-point conversions during the season. That's something that Mike Tomlin has never really believed in. Mike Tomlin never really believed in taking his starting quarterback out of the game. But when you got a guy like Justin Fields, what the heck? What you've been doing hasn't gotten you any playoff wins, so you might as well try something a little different.
What does the Arthur Smith offense look like to you compared to what you were watching from Matt Canada? I know it's way different, Jerry, but how much different is it?
Well, we're going to find that out in the games, but there is no question that Arthur Smith wants to be very physical, Mike. And, when he was hired, I talked to Mike Mularkey. I talked to Ken Wisenhunt. I talked to Mike Munchak. These are all guys in Tennessee. All you need to know about Arthur Smith is he was hired by Mike Munchak, and three other coaches retained him on their staff, the next three, Wisenhunt, Mularkey, and then Mike Vrabel. That's how highly those coaches think of Arthur Smith. And, he's going to feature the tight ends. He wants to run the ball. He wants to be a physical guy. And their two running backs are physical running backs. So you saw what he did with Derrick Henry in Tennessee. And Najee Harris is the closest thing in this league to Derrick Henry with his power. And so to me, you would think Najee Harris is the perfect fit for Arthur Smith's offense. But I will tell you, they like Jaylen Warren a great deal. Jaylen Warren has proven to be a better pass catcher and pass protector. Not that Najee Harris isn't, but that's where he's been very productive. And they use those backs. They're 1 and 1A. That's not number one and number two. That's 1 and 1A. And I expect those backs, and you see the attention they've paid to the offensive line. I expect those backs in that power running game will be the feature for them.
Always great to get the insight from Jerry Dulac. Great stuff, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
All right, fellas. Good chatting with you.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure when Jerry joins us from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Follow him at Jerry Dulac. We'll continue the guest role, and we'll jump into our other team with burning questions for the day today, the Indianapolis Colts, as Mike Chappell joins us from Indy when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the Lombardi Line continues from downtown Las Vegas. I'm Ben, in for Stormy rest of the week. Stormy enjoying a great vacation in Maui right now. I saw some pics, Michael. So she's living her best life. She'll be back. So I think as we get into the first full week of preseason, so excited for that. And it's been great to go through here our different reporters and get some different insights on teams. Just a great segment there with Jerry Dulac talking Pittsburgh Steelers. And we're about to get another one here from Mike Chappell as we go out to Colts camp, talk a little AFC South football here with the Indianapolis Colts as we head out to our progressive guest line right now. He's a reporter for the Colts, works for Fox 59, CBS 4 there in Indy. Mike Chappell joins us right now. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. And a big thing we've been talking about, especially with some of our guests involving quarterbacks returning from injury, is just, okay, what are the early returns? How are they looking here through offseason practices and into camp? What's been your view on the Anthony Richardson piece as all eyes are on him and his return back to full health?
Probably that he's not missed practice. He's not missed any reps with the ones. And, I had a little bit of question coming into camp about how his shoulder was because, he missed the last day of mini camp. So you have questions, but he looks fine. We see the strong arm. He's completing about, 70-75% of his throws in 11-on-11. Make of that what you will, because, you still can't hit the quarterback, but I think he looks fine. He's run when it's required and run when they wanted him to. So early on, after four practices, thumbs up.
Mike, when one of the concerns when you watch this team last year is bad quarterbacks. Aiden O'Connell threw for 283 yards against them at home. What do you think they've done to improve their pass defense this year based on what you're seeing at camp?
Well, they drafted Leatu Latu, which, you know, he was their top defensive player on the board because they had to take a chance to take anybody they wanted. And we've seen he looks good. He looks fast. Yeah, but you don't know. Today was the first day in pads, and he looked the same. He looked fast. He blew past two or three tackles on one-on-ones and an 11-on-11. So it's going to be getting better from within because they really didn't go outside. This is bringing everybody back outside of the draft pick, again, the first-round pick. So it's getting better from within, and that means the safeties and the corners, who I still have a little bit of question about. But the pass rush should be pretty strong, although they lose Samson Ebukam yesterday with an Achilles. I think it just maybe accelerates how quickly Latu plays early on.
And with that Ebukam piece, too, you know, the front seven in general was always the unit that was sort of helping to amend and basically cover up any of the weaknesses from the secondary that was pretty poor once opposing quarterbacks had time to throw on him. Where does the depth now sit here with Ebukam, who's a very, very valuable rotational piece for the Colts? How does that kind of change the calculus and as you look at it from the D-line into the front seven piece of it this year for an Indy team that certainly relied on that part of its defense a lot to generate a lot of pressure and success?
Yeah, it's funny. If you ranked the top 10 players on the team, he probably isn't one of them, which isn't, I don't mean that as a knock, but he was their leading sack guy last year, 9.5. And all of a sudden you've got to replace 9.5 sacks. Well, that's not so easy to do. And so I just think it's going to be more of Dio Odoyegbo and Tyquan Lewis on the outside. But again, when they get in, and it's funny how fans and sometimes the media, we get hung up on who starts. That doesn't really matter with this team. It's who's in on the money downs in the fourth quarter and passing downs. And it's going to be Latu. He's going to be out there. I just, again, think that with the injury to Samson, I just think it's going to mean if Latu is going to get 30 reps, maybe he gets 40. And if that gives him more opportunities again, when you've got a defensive line with Quiddy Pay, who's coming off his best season, and DeForest Buckner, who simply keeps playing as well as any free technique in the league. I think they're going to put Latu in positions to where he gets those one-on-ones, because you can't double team Buckner. You can't double team Quiddy Pay and all these guys. But I think they're going to try to put Latu in some advantageous rush positions. And I don't know. Is he a double sack guy as a rookie? I don't know. Maybe. I remember when Dwight Freeney, who's going into the Hall of Fame this weekend, was a rookie. He didn't start until like the eighth or ninth game against Philly, and then he just went off the charts. He would have been rookie of the year had it not been for Julius Peppers. I'm not predicting that kind of impact from Latu, but I think they would love it, and I think they're going to try to put him into positions to where he can have that kind of impact in passing situations.
Let's shift. Last year, all we talked about was Jonathan Taylor's contract. Now, this year, he's signed, sealed, delivered. What does he look like? How different does this Colt offense look with him back there full-time?
Yeah, totally different. I mean, we talked about this in the offseason last year. Well, boy, what's the pairing going to be with Taylor and Richardson? Once Taylor gets back, he misses the first four games. And they played two plays together last year, too. And the game that Richardson had the shoulder injury is the game that Taylor came back. So they really haven't had a chance to see what these guys can do. They believe that if Richardson can stay on the field, which I think he will, I think the injury, injury-prone thing is sort of overblown, but I understand it. But they think that with Richardson and Taylor, you know, on the edge, which one's going to get it? And if you guess wrong or whatever, if they overload a side, either one of these guys can get off. But I really think Taylor has a chance to approach 2021, not necessarily 1,800 yards. I don't think that's going to be likely. But, you know, 5 yards a carry and you know, get back to the touchdown machine he was. They really believe that's a great tandem to have in that backfield.
He is Mike Chappell joining us on our Progressive guest line. You follow him at mchappell51, Colts reporter. You see him on Fox 59, CBS 4 there in Indy. As far as the secondary, and when we've talked defense, for those wondering, Laiatu Latu, second favorite right now to win Defensive Rookie of the Year with a big expectation coming in for him, the rookie out of UCLA. As far as the secondary, though, we all think of Kenny Moore, very solid slot corner. You think of the secondary play they've gotten in the past from Julian Blackmon. Who is the next player up, though, that you expect, or at least the hope is, to take a leap and try to shore up without, as you mentioned, without many acquisitions really made, specifically in the secondary in the offseason, that if there is going to be improvement in that area, it'll come from these maybe one or two players that you're kind of having your eyes on there in that secondary room?
Well, Juju Brents, the second-round pick last year, he's got the size, he's at 6'2", I don't know, 210. He's got the range. He had injury issues last year with a broken wrist in college and then hamstring quads. And he's got to stay on the field and be a difference maker on the corner. And Jalen Jones on the other corner, he needs to kind of step up. And he played pretty well last year, kind of trial by fire as a rookie. And at safety, Blackmon is good. He's really good. But they need either Nick Cross, they hope Nick Cross, Ronnie Harrison Jr., or Rodney Thomas to be that guy. I'm still a little surprised they've not signed a veteran safety. There's still a few out there, and you're not going to pay a ton of money at this point for a veteran who's played and played at a good level. I would feel better knowing how this team is and how they believe they're close to really, really competing for the division. I'm a little surprised they've left themselves vulnerable in the secondary with the lack of any moves, no moves. I'm a little surprised that, and if they were going to do it, I mean, Mike knows if you're going to sign somebody that you expect them to play, you do it now. So they've got a chance to at least learn your system. And the deeper we go into training camp, it just seems less and less likely they're going to sign somebody.
Mike, put you on the spot. Do they win the South this year, or do they fall short?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say they fall short and win a wild card berth. I think this can be a playoff team, but, boy, it's all on the quarterback. It's on the quarterback and Taylor. That's a lot to put on a quarterback who's played four games and thrown 84 passes in the NFL.
Mike Chappell with us right now. Schedule-wise, too, what do you make of a setup there for Indy where, on paper, easiest strength to schedule based on win totals, but a lot of tough weeks with rest edge, opponents coming off either bye weeks or short weeks there for the Colts this year, which certainly makes that a tougher strength to schedule maybe than on paper.
Well, we're going to find out right away. They've got Houston coming in here, that's where it finished last year. A failed 4th-and-1. And now you've got a Houston team that everyone regards as the AFC South favorite and more. They're probably top, gosh, I don't know, 4 or 5 in the AFC. I like the way they're built. And then, then you go to Green Bay. So you're right. They've got last year, a lot of the backup quarterbacks they faced. Well, this year they got the big guys all the way up and down the list with Josh Allen and Stroud twice and Tua and all these guys, Trevor Lawrence. So I like the schedule, but they've not won an opener since like 2013. They got to get that going, but this should be a very interesting year.
No question on that. Mike Chappell, great insights from Colts camp. Really appreciate it as always. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
We'll come back, wrap up everything on the other side. A couple other news and notes around the league when we return to the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Whole lot of great articles up right now on our new look website, VSiN.com, including Steve Mackinnon on the Hall of Fame game. Excited to break that down with Michael tomorrow. We also have full Olympic betting previews, as well as daily baseball from Adam Burke. Adam going to be in studio with us, as we'll get a nice preview of the college football betting guide coming up later this week. That's all in addition to best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. VSiN.com. And a big thank you to Jerry Dulac, Mike Chappell, Jerry from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Mike from Fox 59, CBS 4 in Indianapolis. Michael joining us today. I thought, if anything, it's interesting just to get probably Jerry's perspective too on, you talk about things that go under the radar that you need to focus on that do matter, but we might not generally talk about in the media. New strength and conditioning staff coming in Pittsburgh, and already leading to some sort of interesting decisions as far as Russell Wilson being asked to push sleds out there. That was a big thing I took away. Anything else that jumped off the page to you from those comments?
I thought his commentary on Justin Fields was really interesting because, you know, if Justin Fields has one good preseason game, you know, the worldwide leader and all his compadres there are going to want to demand that he has MVP voting and be the starter. But I think Jerry, you know, being a seasoned beat writer, has covered a lot of good Steeler teams, can see the difference between a completed pass and a quarterback who can function within an offense. So I wouldn't be rushing to the window to bet Fields for MVP, nor would I rush to the window to bet for him to become the starter. I think it's a little bit what he said was fairly clear to him. So I thought that was. And I think to me, Jerry sounded like optimistic that this team was going to allow these competitions within the offensive line at receiver to go through training camp to see. On as far as the Colts, I was surprised when I asked Mike the question, are they going to win the South? He kind of ran away from it. But everything before I asked him that question was really positive, because if you're counting on the quarterback to stay healthy, you got to think this is a team that can win the South. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it leads into the variance that we're seeing with how tight the, you know, the AFC South is. We've talked so much about Houston, right? But I still feel like Jacksonville is the slept-on team in this division, where, you know, they go from that worst-to-first situation, the new role last year, clearly unable to handle that. But it's funny how it seems like Colts getting so much buzz because of the excitement and of the unknown, right, of the flashes we saw out of Anthony Richardson. I think the potential is certainly there. It kind of feels like Jacksonville, of those three teams, is kind of getting forgot about. That was my pick to win the division this year. Would not shock me, though. I kind of feel like it's an expectation that you should, in the AFC South, given the strength of those three teams, two of them should get into the postseason. At Colts being a playoff team, a very real possibility. And, you know, from a betting angle, it's one of those things where it probably makes more sense to bet them at a slight plus money number to just make the playoffs, as opposed to, you know, the division shot, where, like, I think it's a little bit kind of murky, up in the air, as far as can Indianapolis do enough against the strengths of the other teams in their division to actually get over the hump, when you do have more avenues now with the third wild card there to at least get in the postseason in some form.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing Mike made a great point about is, and I'm sure many people here that listen to our show, Ben, and that listen to our network have all too familiar with Indy not winning opening games, because year they went down to Jacksonville that it looked like a slam dunk. I mean, there went most of Survivor out of the tournament. So, yes, I do think they need to start faster and be better prepared to handle it. You know, they lost to they've lost twice to Jacksonville last year, you know, in the opener. And then in week 7 of the season, or week 8 of the season, they got thumped fairly good by them. So, you know, at 37, they gave up 37 points. See, this is what worries me about the Colts, is every time they play against somebody who understands how to move the football effectively in the passing game, their defense can't make enough adjustments. And, you know, when I asked Mike about the defense with Bradley, I mean, if you're counting on a rookie Latua to be the guy, to change the landscape of the defense, that's really hard to do.
It's a lot of weight to put on, admittedly, shoulders who can, you know, can lift a lot, but that's in a different sense there for Latu, who, you're right, without any other real key additions, comes in and is going to have the burden, especially now with you lose another key piece, at least as far as rotational guys, and a Samson Ebuka come out with that Achilles injury. Speaking of the division, though, some other news that comes out, it's interesting how back-to-back days now, Michael, we had yesterday Danico Autry hit with a 6-game PED suspension, who was brought over from Tennessee to Houston. Now today, Arden Key, part of a front seven where, you know, Tennessee, it looks on paper as though, as much as the Titans bolstered the secondary, front seven looks to be a weakness of that defense, and now you lose Key, who was the third leader in sacks on that team a year ago.
Right. And I mean, remember, Key was in San Francisco where Rand Carthon was there. And look, they're going to need everything, because that secondary got exposed last year. And there's no question about that. Now, I know they signed Snead to help, but when Key was going good, he played well in Jacksonville 2 years ago. Didn't think he played to the same level that he played in Jacksonville for Tennessee this year. But I think the big thing for Tennessee is going to be, can they have enough defensive front guys to help Simmons out inside, which is interesting. They're going to need to do that. The kid they drafted from Texas, Sweat, is a little bit like the Tart kid who they let go. Very talented, but not sure he loves football. But I think the bigger issue here is, do they have enough team speed on defense with Murray as the middle linebacker? Murray didn't really play exactly great down there at the Chargers as a first-round pick. He was kind of a weak link within their scheme. And I think when you look at Tennessee's inability to create turnovers with their defense, you know, I think to me that's a real issue. So I'm, again, Tennessee, a lot of this is how their defense plays will be relative to what they're going to do offensively, right? I mean, last year they were very good against the run, because they are good against the run, but they struggled against the pass. They were 32nd in interceptions allowed, 23rd in yards per attempt. I mean, they couldn't cover anybody. And is Will Levis going to be good enough? I think that's got to me, that's the fundamental question about this team.
And also the protection in front of him. It's perennially been a bottom five O-line unit. You're talking young quarterback, needs time to let plays develop in front of him. When he finally had clean pockets, I mean, he was good on deep balls last year. It's just, how long will he actually be able to stand upright in the pocket? I still have a lot of doubts about Tennessee, how much improvements they've really made on that offensive line. I still have them a bottom five unit, at least coming into this year. It's one of those, as of many units we have around the league, Michael, it is a classic prove-it-to-me type unit before I'm going to believe that they're anything more than that bottom five sort of O-line we have in the league.
No question. But, you know, I think Bill Callahan can help make a difference there. And I think that's what you're counting on. Now, here's the issue, too, Ben. If you go back and study the Bengals, first when Zach Taylor went there, offensively, it wasn't pretty. And they're 32nd in almost every single category. They tried to run the spread, but without Joe Burrow running the spread, getting him in the right protections, getting him in the right things, it didn't work out. And that's my question is Will Levis going to be able to handle the multitude of offense that he has to handle at the line of scrimmage, that Joe Burrow kind of sorts his way through? Because when you're an 11 team and you have an edge open all the time, you've got to always be in the right protection. You've got to make sure that you know where you're protected, where you're not protected, where you have to throw the ball to avoid the sacks, avoid the negative play. The other thing about this Tennessee team that I don't understand is they have two change of pace backs, Spears and Pollard. Pollard wasn't the same back. We know that. Mm-hmm. They have no thumper. They have no real thumper in their offense. And so, you know, I know they didn't want to sign Henry. They wanted to be more of a loose play team, a guy that could handle that. But I think you got to have a little bit of power. I think Spears is a change of pace player is good, but I don't think Pollard was the same guy he was 2 years ago.
And also leads into, for a head coach coming in, first time in that role now, when you welcome in Brian Callahan, it is huge to bring in his dad, Bill, to help lead the offensive line. But we generally see, too, early on, not only adjustments on offense, but new head coaches tend to really struggle with that learning curve early on. And you're bringing in such a different look here for Tennessee. That to me is where I have doubts on the Titans right away, where you come in, it's a division that, sure, you look at opportunities within that division to maybe make things a little bit more competitive than the expectations are. But we've seen this time and again, it's not every year you get the DeMeco Ryans who comes in and you're just immediately looking like a 10-year vet on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, look, but that team was so, you know, they hit with Stroud. Look, let's face it, they got the right system in place. You know what's amazing about the Houston Texans? They couldn't run the ball at all, and yet their offense was based all on play action pass.
Yeah.
And they got away with it. They're really, the yards per attempt down the field, the passing game is what made them. They couldn't run the ball. I know they had Motor Singletary running back there, and he helped a little bit, but their average per carry, their inability to really win first down, they were able to make explosive plays. Now, can Tennessee do that? We'll see. See, I think it comes back to I didn't see Levis as an instinctive rhythm thrower that can handle volume at the line of scrimmage.
It was a little bit, yeah, it felt random last year with Levis. Like, there were times where you're like, oh boy, look at this, deep ball, DeAndre Hopkins, 50 yards downfield. But in the middle of all that, while the highlights are great, it's the down-to-down consistency. And it seemed like, Michael, as soon as teams had film on Levis, it was like, okay, we're going to take away what you're most comfortable with. We're going to pressure you. And that is where we saw a lot of those rookie struggles. It's as much as you can point to Ryan's, the system was so important. It was the fourth year of having a Nick Caserio-led roster in place. As you talk about the system, where is that for Tennessee? I don't see it right now. So I certainly feel like there's a big gap between them and fourth and the rest of that division 1-3.
No question. I think, and defensively, there's a gap. Can they cover well enough, and can they rush?
All right.
Are they going to be able to get pressure?
No doubt. Excited for tomorrow. We'll break down the Hall of Fame game, talk some Texans in depth, and some Chicago Bears tomorrow. Michael, always great hanging with you as we wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Sharp Money coming up next.